And that was Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks with a little number there. And it's about 8 minutes before the hour of 6 o'clock. Of course, you're here at the Roadhouse on WTIP. And we're joined by telephone right now by Erica Butter. And she's a wildlife veterinarian with the Minnesota DNR. Erica, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. And thanks so much on a Friday night for staying late to do this for us.
No problem.
You know, it seems like in Minnesota, everywhere actually, but of course we're in Minnesota, we're being faced by invasive species. We got jumping carp. We got, you know, everything clinging to boats and moving, infesting other lakes. But there's also a lot of things happening at a different level, and that's with insects and smaller animals and plant species. Right now, you've been very busy with something that may be related to what we're having, seeing with the moose here in Minnesota, although it's a little too early, I guess, to say, but it's called EEEV. Can you tell us what that is and how it came to your attention?
Yep, you bet. It's Eastern Equine Encephalitis virus, and it's a virus that's normally carried in bird populations, and mosquitoes that feed on them, you know, will transmit the virus a lot like West Nile. But we started in 2007 screening our moose herd. When they were harvested by hunters, we started screening them for a whole bunch of diseases. And this was one of them. Basically, what happens when it infects mammals, it can be pretty lethal, more lethal than West Nile. And we actually found evidence that our moose are being exposed to the virus in 2007 and every year since. And this is the first time we documented this virus in Minnesota, and it was pretty interesting for us.
Now, why do you think now? Is it that we're having different birds here, or a season adjustment that would bring them here now? Have you any idea why that virus would be showing up at this date?
You know, that 2007 was the first time we looked for it.
There.
So, you know, it's hard to say when it first appeared on the landscape up there. You know, certainly any you know, seasons or, you know, changes in climate that would, you know, positively impact mosquito populations or bring perhaps, like you mentioned, new species of birds into the area could, you know, increase the prevalence of this virus. But that being said, we'd never looked before. And now that once we found it in moose, we started looking in other species as well. And we found it in wolves, evidence that they've been exposed to it anyway. You know, we don't know if they're getting sick from it or not, but wolves and deer and elk throughout northern Minnesota.
Now, when West Nile showed up, was there a specific reason for that? Was there a species that had moved in, or do you know anything about that as well?
Yep, West Nile was actually introduced from Uganda, and it had a lot to do with the global market.
Okay.
So it came to the United States in 1999. I believe they first documented it in New York, and we were able to watch it spread across the country after its introduction. But Triple E, I mean, you know, the best of my knowledge, it's been here for a while, and it's, you know, kind of common in the, you know, areas to the south and east of us, more so than Minnesota. I think the only time we've documented actual Triple E before this in moose was in 2001, I think, in some horses near the metro.
Now, equine, I generally think of horses when I see that word. Is it something related to horses that?
Yeah, the reason it got its name is because when it infects horses, it has nearly 100%, I think it's around 90% mortality rate in unvaccinated horses. And so horse owners are, you know, the ones who notice it most when it's out on the landscape. And so it's, you know, we commonly refer to it as Eastern Equine Encephalitis virus.
Well, that's a pretty major thing if people started losing 90%. Affecting their horses, people started losing their horses, particularly real expensive and well-bred horses.
Yeah, and that's, you know, always a good reminder to make sure your horses are current on West Nile and Triple E vaccines.
I see. So
it's pretty, you know, cheap preventative medicine that you can do that will protect your horses.
Now, I also read that it can affect humans as well.
It can. You know, I think it's a lot like West Nile, where lots of people are exposed, but few people become ill. That being said, I mean, it's much less incidence of illness in humans than West Nile. I think it's less than 10% or 10 people per year that are diagnosed in the entire United States.
I see. So it's really rare.
Yes, but when you do get it, it's got a greater than a 50% mortality rate, and those who survive are often neurological deficits.
Wow, what kind of symptoms do people get then?
You know, it can vary anywhere from fever, headache, body ache, just like West Nile, to full-blown neurological symptoms such as seizures.
Wow. Well, we shouldn't be spraying down our homes and lawns yet with fear of contracting that ourselves, though. It doesn't sound like.
No, but that being said, you know, bug spray and everything, you definitely want to use it.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the moose go, you said about 25% of the moose that you've tested seem to have antibodies in their system. Does that mean that they contracted and were able to overcome the disease?
I think you're referring to the, you must have read in the Duluth News Tribune.
I did, yes.
Yep, 25% in certain moose hunting zones were positive. Overall, of all the moose we tested, which has been quite a bit, it's been near 500, I believe, and that was 6% overall.
Oh, I see. Much smaller.
We located these, certain areas that it had a higher prevalence, and that's what kind of prompted us to start this mosquito testing, was because we thought there were such differences in, areas that were very near each other and seemed pretty similar to us, but clearly there's something else going on.
Have you been studying other things, other aspects of moose decline or possibilities for why this could be happening?
Absolutely. We're trapping horseflies, looking at other parasites that they carry that clog arteries and moose, all sorts of things. We're screening them for about 24 disease agents, any sick ones that we get reports of right now, and then hunter-harvested ones as well. And in January, we're starting a big adult moose mortality project where we'll be capturing 100 adult moose and putting collars on them that are pretty cool. They actually send us a text message when the moose dies.
How can they do that with their big old hooves?
Yeah, right. They've got very good thumbs. Well, that's going to be really neat. So we're really hoping to get a better answer at what's actually causing our moose to be disappearing like they are.
So that means you can get out there quicker and really see what's happening.
Yep, exactly.
Wow. Now, it's not only the DNR that's working on solving this problem. You've got a lot of, a lot of different agencies that are looking into this.
Yeah, that's part of the awesome part of this study. There's a whole variety. Everybody from the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine to the Minnesota Department of Health, the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District, University of Minnesota Duluth, the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota, it's just, the list goes on, 1854, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, all sorts of people are on board, and, everybody's donating their time or, assisting buying dry ice for the traps, or everybody's doing their part. It's pretty neat.
Well, maybe we should talk a little bit about how you get species out in the field and just how this research really works.
Yeah, it's actually it's kind of fun, I think. They're basically little coolers that are full of dry ice, and on the bottom hangs a light, and the dry ice, as it sublimates, when it turns from, it actually goes from a solid straight to a gas and releases carbon dioxide, which attracts mosquitoes, and then the light attracts them as well, and there's a fan hooked up to a little battery like you'd have on your Vexlar for ice fishing, those little tiny batteries,
mm-hmm.
that blows the mosquitoes right into a net.
Really?
Yep. We take them, we freeze them on dry ice, and then the entomologist and the student from the College of Veterinary Medicine speciate them, pool them by location and trap date, and then we test them for viruses, not just Triple E, but hopefully West Nile and other mosquito-borne diseases as well.
Now, there's a lot of different species of mosquitoes in Minnesota, apparently.
51.
And how many have you found in your trap so far?
Either 20 or 22. They're still waiting on confirmation of two.
Okay.
Others. But that's just in northern Minnesota, so that's a lot, because you'd expect less there with how cold it is.
Now, my co-host and I, we're not real fond of mosquitoes.
Me either.
So I want to know which species keeps biting me. Get rid of that one.
Yeah, right? I wish we could.
Yeah. So these different species, they all have different places where you find them, or different times of day that, and different animals that attract them as potential feed stations?
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, it's so crazy, the differences you see in mosquitoes. Like you mentioned, where they feed, which animals they feed on. Some will only feed on mosquitoes, birds. Some will only feed on reptiles, even. And some, we call them bridge vectors, They'll feed on mammals and birds, and those are the ones that spread disease among us. But then, I mean, not only that, but, you know, some of them will only breed in tamarack in, like, you know, cavities in trees or water pools.
Oh.
And so that's part of what we're looking at, is where we see these differences in the, you know, prevalence in the antibody rates in our hunter-harvested moose. Is there a difference on the landscape that allows for different species?
So the ones that you called, did you refer to them as bridge insects?
Bridge vectors, yep.
Bridge vectors, they're the ones that would be taking the virus from the birds and spreading it to the animals?
Yep, to animals or humans, or yep.
So those are the bad guys?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah,
but it's pretty hard to point those out when you're walking through the woods.
Yeah, it is. Without a microscope, especially.
When, if you are able to determine, one or two species of mosquitoes that are really seen to be spreading this, how is that helpful to you?
You know, it's helpful as far as they could do, you know, if it was a human risk factor, they could do trapping efforts and, you know, increase spraying when they start to see that species. For the moose, I think it's more of a, you know, research interest, and, you know, we probably will be a few years before we have any methods that we can use for management to help with the moose decline. But in horses, it can definitely alert people that, you know, make sure they're vaccinated. And I think at this point, you know, they should already be aware of that.
Maybe when you put those collars on those moose, you should vaccinate them at the same time.
I wish we could. Vaccinate and deworm them.
Now, is that something that you can do? I mean, would it be the same vaccination for a moose as it would be for a horse?
You know, it could be possible. They're never tested. You know,
okay.
Just like vaccinating a ferret for rabies, it's not approved.
Gotcha.
But it's better than nothing. But we, like the moose that we'll be handling, it's actually a mortality study, so we want to know.
Uh-huh.
What's causing their death, so we don't want to influence it anyway.
Yes. As a wildlife veterinarian for the DNR, what is, now during this crisis period, you know, you're focused on what you're doing right now as far as mosquitoes and the moose and other species that they affect. What is your usual role, your day-to-day?
Well, you never really know what's going to happen, essentially, any day, which is what I love about my job. We get calls, you know, anytime that there's multiple animals reported sick or, you know, doing weird things. If a research animal has died and they need a necropsy, there's three of us in our program. It's myself, and then we have a PhD and a technician as well, and we work really well together with that, just trying to, you know, divide and conquer in the state. But we do CWD, which is chronic wasting disease,
mm-hmm.
in deer. We do the statewide surveillance for that and then respond to any outbreaks as they happen. Tuberculosis. And our deer, all sorts of stuff, captures and immobilizations, drugs for them. It's pretty awesome.
Wow. We're speaking with Erica Butler, and she's a wildlife veterinarian with the Minnesota DNR. You mentioned, too, that you're finding those antibodies in wolves as well.
Yep.
Now, I imagine there's no reason why they wouldn't be on a whole variety of animals out there.
Yeah, everything so far that we've tested, we've found. Wolves, deer, and moose.
I'm going to have to get mosquito netting for my bed.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Now, maybe you mentioned how you originally, or the DNR or somebody originally found that it's a problem in Minnesota. Was it when you were studying the moose?
Yep, yeah, it was in 2007.
Okay.
Basically, we had realized that our northeastern population of moose was declining. You know, our models right now suggest that, you know, within 20 years, the northeast moose population could be gone from Minnesota, mm-hmm. much like what happened in the northwestern Minnesota. And we knew that they were harvesting moose still, and we had access to these samples, you know, and we actually asked our hunters to do almost all of our work for us. I like to say that, and, you know, people said our hunters would never do this, but it's very clear our moose hunters, you know, value the moose in our state, and they were, mm-hmm. we have almost a 95% complete, cooperation rate on these sampling kits. And they, you know, they do, they collect lung and liver, whole livers. They're carrying whole moose livers out of the boundary waters for us, and blood as soon as they're shot. And we use that, and we started sampling for it, and that's when we first found evidence of the virus.
Yeah, that's great. Will there be a moose season again now this coming year?
Yep, it actually starts September 29th.
Do you know what the population is looking like out there for moose?
Yeah, our survey this year, I think it put us at about 4,500 animals, which is down, you know, I think our peak from northeastern Minnesota was about 8,000 animals, and we're at 4,500, and it's a pretty significant decline from year to year right now.
Right. Do you think there's a point that you would have to say, or that the DNR might feel pressure to stop having the season until they can increase the population?
We have a Minnesota Moose Management Plan, mm-hmm. and it lays out certain triggers that would cause us to close our moose season. That being said, right now we're, you know, harvesting less than 100 bull moose only in the state. You know, we have a very healthy bull-to-cow ratio. There's no problems with breeding out there.
Okay.
So we don't believe that our moose hunting is having any sort of impact on our moose population.
Is this any kind of a similar study happening on IRL?
They've had a very long-term study on their moose populations out there.
They have, but as far as EEEV is...
Oh, no, this is the triple E testing that we're doing,
yes.
And the mortality project is one of kind, basically.
Okay. It could be a similar problem out there. We really don't know. Yeah, exactly. Well, Erica, you know, it's been great talking to you, and I think we've learned a lot here tonight, and I sure appreciate you giving us your time on a Friday night.
No problem.
And we'll let you get out and play now again.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.